Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. American politics have never been for the faint of heart. Lately, the language on air in the era of President Obama, economic bust, and big government bailouts has been particularly hot. And hot when sales of guns and ammunition are surging. Here's Glenn Beck of Fox News.
The Manchurian candidate couldn't destroy us faster than Barack Obama. If you were planning a sleeper to come in and become the president of the United States and dismantle us and take us down, this is how he would do it.
Radio talk show host Michael Savage.
He's a fascist. I know that you don't want to hear this, but the man is a neo-Marxist fascist dictator.
And Sean Hannity on his radio show.
If the government takes too much money and nationalizes everything, I'm telling you there are going to be dire consequences, because we're going to, just like if it was a terror attack against America, Americans will get hurt.
This hour on Point, hot airwaves, fear and anger in the age of Obama and economic bust. You can join the conversation. Is this business as usual? Something different? What do you make of fear and loathing on the airwaves in the time of bust and Obama? Is it par for the course, a hot flash, a new course? We will hear a little later in this hour from former Republican Congressman Mickey Edwards. But first, joining me from Washington is Alan Lichtman, professor of history at American University. He's a real student of the ups and downs of fiery rhetoric and organizing in our country's history. He's the author of White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement. Alan, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be on the air with you.
And with us from Montgomery, Alabama, is Mark Potok, Program Director for the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project. He's a longtime watcher and analyst of extremist and hate groups around the country. Mark, welcome back to On Point to you as well.
Well, thank you so much, Tom. It's a pleasure.
Let's just run through a little more of this, and then we'll dive in and think about what it means. Here's Sean Hannity, Fox News host, slamming the Obama bailout plan 2 weeks ago, particularly the mandate that Chrysler partner up with the Italian automaker Fiat.
Now, when was the last time a president of the United States forced the sale of an American company to a foreign one? And this is just the beginning. The administration is on a mission to hijack capitalism in favor of collectivism, to turn health care into a nationalized affair, and to redistribute the wealth of America. The Bolsheviks have already arrived, and they're here.
The Bolsheviks have arrived, and they're here, and there's more that we'll hear. Mark Potok, you've been listening. There's a lot of talk. I've heard it ever since before Obama was elected, and since he was elected, you know, rise up. We can't take this. Capitalism is at risk. This is socialism or Bolshevism, as Hannity has it there. It's tough economic times. People get on edge. Is this just the way it works in the United States, or is this something different, Mark?
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear that we have a long history of this kind of conspiracy thinking in this country, more than most other countries. So, you know, in a sense, it's more of the same. I covered as a reporter in great detail the militia movement of the 90s, and it is remarkable not only how similar, but often identical, the theories that are being put out there, the completely false theories. You know, when Glenn Beck talks about the possibility of FEMA setting up secret concentration camps to hold Americans and so forth, that is right out of the militia world. It seems to me that one of the remarkable differences between now and then is back then it was largely a matter of talk radio, which had been more or less taken over by the right and in some cases the radical right. Now we're seeing this stuff come from cable news stations like CNN and Fox that have hundreds of thousands and sometimes millions of listeners. Quite remarkable.
Let's listen to a little more. Here's Fox host Glenn Beck 2 weeks ago talking about what the Obama government's doing. On the screen behind him, ominous picture of Ben Bernanke, kind of evoking George Orwell's 1984.
They're marching us towards 1984. Big Brother, he's watching. They're controlling. They're telling you how to run your business, who to hire, who to fire, how much to pay them. They're controlling your life and suggesting now in the G20 and the UN even how to parent your own children.
How to parent your children. And here's a radio talk show host out of California, Lee Rogers, talking on his show last month.
You have elected to the White House a total bleepin' dummy who clearly is more sympathetic with the long-term goals of world communism and, let's be blunt about it, Muslim terrorists than with any legitimate American goals.
Barack Obama, more sympathetic with Muslim terrorists than American goals. And here's Pat Buchanan, conservative commentator on MSNBC last month, saying Obama's spending policies mean one thing.
That is socialism.
That's
pure
true.
And simple. And he is coming up with his carbon tax, as John and I were talking. He's got national health care. I'll tell you, for conservatives, this is pitchfork time. And you can tell the non-combatants to get off the field, because this is going to be a battle royal to decide whether the United States takes the greatest leap forward we have ever seen into government control.
Alan Lichtman, you've been listening, and you're listening right now. I mean, it's hot stuff, and you know, it doesn't. It's not afraid to say, "Rise up," whatever that means in a democracy. That can mean organize, be citizens in the streets. We've got tea parties planned, so-called, around the country this week. Model on the old Boston Tea Party against big government spending. Okay, hey, we've done that ever since the Boston Tea Party. Is this just the United States of America, Alan? What does history tell us about what we're hearing out there right now? And we've got those gun sales surging in the midst of all it.
History tells us this is absolutely nothing new. It might be appalling to many sensibilities, but it is not unique in American history. Just to go back across the 20th century, we can go to the 1920s, when the Ku Klux Klan recruited not 1 million, not 2 million, but 3 to 5 million members by 1925 in a much less populous country than there is today. And, of course, they were purveyors of vitriolic hate speech against foreigners, against Jews, against blacks, against Catholics. In the 1920s, one of the most admired men in the world, America's leading industrialist, Henry Ford, published vicious anti-Semitic attacks on Jews in the Dearborn Independent, his newspaper, and he published a book on that, and he even based this on the so-called Protocols of the Elders of Zion, a forgery by the agents of the Russian Tsar to justify anti-Jewish pogroms in Russia. And, of course, in the 1930s, we had the so-called shirt movements in the United States, William Dudley Pelley and his silver shirts, Gerald Winrod, the Jayhawk Nazi, whose publication may have attracted as many as 100,000 readers, and many other such movements. But this kind of rhetoric doesn't just come from the fringe. Think about Franklin Roosevelt in the 1930s and the kind of rhetoric he was subjected to. It's very similar to what you just heard, and it came right from the mainstream of the Republican Party. For example, Senator Fess of Ohio said Franklin Roosevelt, quote, is seizing complete power of fascism in order that he may inaugurate the Soviet recommendations that are emanating from the inner cabinet of professors who are steeped in socialism.
Alan Lichtman, hold that thought, because the echoes are loud and clear, amazingly, around us right now. Here's, Michael Savage last month saying that President Obama plans to imprison the nation's children.
Obama's plan to force kids into a paramilitary domestic army has been exposed. It passed the House of Representatives yesterday under a camouflaged bill called a volunteer corps. But it is mandatory. Your child will be conscripted by the Obama fascists, put into a uniform, and God knows what they're going to be forced to do. This was done by Hitler with the Hitler Youth. This was done by Stalin.
It's out there, and it's out there every day, and that's not the only reference back to those times. Here's CNN host Lou Dobbs 2 weeks ago talking about President Obama's initiative to cap corporate pay at institutions that receive government bailout money.
What it is further extension of government control into the institutions.
Yeah, I said,
we are moving toward a combination of corporate power and political power that is so disturbingly similar to what we witnessed in Italy the 1930s, that it's not funny.
And the warning all over here again from Glenn Beck, now of Fox News, guns will be taken away.
He will
slowly but surely take away your gun or take away your ability to shoot a gun, carry a gun. He will make them more expensive. He'll tax them out of existence. He will, because he has said he would, he will tax your gun or take your gun away one way or another.
Meanwhile, maybe because of that kind of warning, gun sales are surging. Mark Potok, Alan Lichtman says, look, we've always had sort of hot political rhetoric in this country. Not new.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And it seems to me the thing that is also not new is that this rhetoric ultimately down the line translates into criminal violence. You know, in the 20s, that might have been burning down Catholic convents and carrying out those kinds of attacks. Today, you know, the clip you just played about Glenn Beck going on about guns being taken away and so on, you know, that was the very kind of rhetoric that apparently directly animated this fellow, Richard Poplawski, who 8 or 9 days ago came out of his house shooting at police officers and murdering three of them.
In Pittsburgh, yeah.
In Pittsburgh, that's correct. And, you know, Poplawski was also very influenced by other kinds of rhetoric that you don't hear so much on Fox, rhetoric from the white supremacist right about the Zionist occupation government and, you know, the Jews kind of run the whole universe, but very, very similar ideas nevertheless. I mean, he, as a matter of fact, reportedly downloaded a video clip of Beck talking and, you know, talked very much after he was arrested about the idea of they were coming to take guns away from him and so on. And by God, you know.
Mark Potok, hold the thought. We've got to take a short break here. Alan Lichtman, stand by. We're talking about fear and anger in the age of Obama and economic bust. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about hot airwaves, fear and anger in the age of Obama and economic bust. We're looking at, well, there's a lot of hot talk on talk radio these days and talk television for that matter. And it's not as though there wasn't hot talk in the years of George W. Bush. But here we are right now with an economic bust at the same time. And if you look at the numbers, gun and ammunition sales surging. Maybe that's just the fear that the Obama government and Democratic Congress will step in to take some gun ownership rights away. Clearly, no small part, but it is a notable things to be happening at the same time. Mark Potok is with us from the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project, joins us from Montgomery, Alabama. Alan Lichtman is here, professor of history at American University, author of White Protestant Nation. Here's Rush Limbaugh talking recently about President Obama, saying he's the product of foreign influences or too sensitive to them, wants to diminish America.
He views this nation as too large. It's a nation that deserves to be cut down to size. He views himself as he views much of the people, the rest of the world, discriminated against, stomped on, bullied by the United States of America. And it's his objective to tell the rest of the world those days are over. We're not going to storm around and steal the world's resources to pollute and destroy the planet as we pursue a standard of living that none of the rest of you have and that we deny you and that we... I mean, he believes all this. So he's going to cut us down to size.
Well, some in the Obama administration might say, well, we need a different foreign policy. Here's Dick Morris. This is interesting. Fox News at the end of last month, political operative, active in many White Houses and beyond in politics. Here we get out into the sort of a militia world and guns and what might happen with guns. On Fox News at the end of last month, Dick Morris was asked about President Obama going to the G20.
The impetus for Obama's policies essentially are European social democrats that want international policies right. So that they can implement their socialism without driving out capital. And this G20 meeting might be the time that they really begin to do it. Those crazies in Montana who say we're going to kill ATF agents because the UN's going to take over, well, they're beginning to have a case.
The armed folks in Montana, ready to kill ATF agents, UN taking over, ready to have a case, is Dick Morrison. Here's a little interview that caught our ear, NPR interviewing a gun store owner, John Dury, in San Antonio last week. Johnny Dury saying that gun and ammunition sales had spiked since Barack Obama had been elected, and there was a shortage of nearly everything in his store.
The people are buying it to protect themselves. They're so scared of the socialist type of, let's take over the banks, let's talk about take over the oil companies, let's give all of this money to people who are without jobs, let's reward all these people who are not working hard. And they said, well, if the government is going that way, what are they going to try to take away from us now? And they, you know what the big concern is they're worried about not being able to get any ammo and not being able to protect themselves.
We'll be joined in just a moment by former Republican Congressman Mickey Edwards. Let's get a couple of calls here first from Mason City, Iowa. John, you're on the air, John.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I got to tell you, for the first time in, quite honestly, a long, long time, I have, for lack of better terminology, I guess, hope in what America could be. And I personally, every time I hear Rush Limbaugh and the rest of the conservatives talk, I laugh inwardly because they're looking stupid, and I think that they need to just shut up. I think that the Republicans had 8 years to deliver us to the promised land, and the vast majority of the American people finally woke up and said, you know what, maybe I shouldn't have to pay $4 a gallon for gas. These conservative people and our lovely former president simply want to make me throw up.
But don't they have a right to stand up and criticize, even criticize very harshly, a sitting president?
Absolutely. That's America. But I can tell you this. Cut the poor guy a break. How long has he been in office, and what's he got accomplished? You take the same amount of time that George W. was in office, and you take the excuse of 9/11 away, because he had all sorts of time afterward, and you have to say, comparison, the vast majority of the people now look at the Bush administration as saying, what a joke and how bad for the country.
John, we've got it. The 9/11 is hard to take out of a picture like that. Yes,
yeah,
is that
can
Alan?
Can I jump in?
Yes.
Yeah, can I jump in here?
Because
I think there's a really important point to be made here. You know, a lot of the same rhetoric, as I said, we heard in the 1930s, and we heard in the 1990s. Rush Limbaugh back then warned of, quote, a second violent American Revolution, because people are sick and tired of a bunch of bureaucrats in Washington driving into town and telling them what they can and can't do with their land. This always backfires against conservatives, and responsible conservatives understand that. Kind of the tie-in with the Republicans and the extremists in the 30s helped powered 20 years of Democratic presidents and decades of Democratic dominance. This extreme rhetoric in the 1990s stalled. The Gingrich Revolution of 1994, when the Republicans had taken over Congress and looked like they may reshape the policies of the United States. But, in the 1960s, the John Birch Society really hurt conservatives. William F. Buckley devoted his career in the 60s to reestablishing responsible conservatism and disassociating conservatism from extremists like the John Birch Society.
I mean, but there's a little bit of a goose and gander issue here. I heard George W. Bush called a fascist in recent years when he was sitting in office by folks on the left. Let me get a call from Columbia, South Carolina. Patrick, you're on the air.
Hello there. I've got three comments. I'll try to make them very quick.
Yes, sir.
The first one is I listen to NPR a good bit, no more than the conservative talk radio. I am a conservative, and I noticed throughout the George Bush presidency, and I'm going to make a strong statement here, NPR never covered George W. Bush in a positive light in anything he did. I'd challenge you to go back, listen to your recordings, and you'll find that you all were actually doing the same thing to George W. Bush for the last 8 years. And I may have missed some of the programs that were positive, but when I heard a positive comment, it always was followed by something that tore up George W. Secondly, the argument you've got going right now is about the tone of the conservatives.
Well, tone and words. Tone and words. Actual words.
I hear you. I hear you talking about the words that are accompanying the tone, but what you're not dealing with is the content. And you're not saying, hey, look, the conservatives are saying that Obama has proposed more spending for the next 5 years than all the previous 33 presidents put together. I don't hear you coming out and saying, what's the truth of that? And in all these different issues. Instead, you're attacking the messenger rather than dealing with the message. You're not really dealing with the message. And then thirdly, you know, I think you need to face up to, and I say you in the general sense of the liberal media, conservatives are at least honest about their bias. They say they're conservatives, they show where they are, but the liberal media tries to act like you're objective in your analysis, and you're not. I want to challenge you right now.
Patrick, we've got it loud and clear. I'm not saying that anybody here walks on water. We do try. I want to bring Mickey Edwards in just a second. Let's hear one more bit from Rush Limbaugh, who's encouraging people to turn out for tea parties on April 15th, Tax Day, to protest stimulus spending and deficit spending. Here's Rush.
How many people voted against Obama? Was it 55, 56 million people voted against him? And I don't think anything has changed to make those 55 or 56 million. You know, I made a mistake. This is a great guy. I mean, I really like what he's doing to our economy. I really like what he's doing to our country. I really like how he's over there in Europe apologizing for us every stop he makes. I don't think that's happened.
Rush Limbaugh on the president, joining us right now from Princeton, New Jersey, is Mickey Edwards, former Republican congressman from Oklahoma, served 16 years in Congress until 1993, was a member of the House Republican leadership there, is now a lecturer in public and international affairs at Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School, author of Reclaiming Conservatism. Mickey Edwards, thank you very much for being with us again.
Thanks. Glad to be with you.
You know, we said it right at the top. American politics isn't patty cake. People weren't mild on George W. Bush, and certainly not mild now. Our caller in South Carolina says talk substance, and we do day in and day out, but we're taking a minute here to look at this vein of very hot rhetoric. What do you make of it, Mickey? Is it just par for the course?
Well, it is par for the course right now, but it shouldn't be. I mean, the last caller had very few good points, but one of the points he made that was actually accurate was, you know, that during the Bush presidency, you know, the left was really over the top in the nature of their attacks about not only his policies, but about himself and his motives and so forth. So it's something that's coming, you know, out of both sides. And it's a problem. It's a problem when Newt Gingrich goes on television and he compares Rahm Emanuel to Haldeman. It's coming from not just the Rush Limbaughs. If it was just an occasional buffoon like Rush Limbaugh, you could brush it aside. But it actually comes now, this sort of nastiness from people much more generally, and you have Rush Limbaugh on one side, you have Keith Olbermann on the other side, and it's nothing but name-calling.
Do you hear a conversation in conservative circles, Mickey, in Republican circles, saying, let's chill out a little bit here between the ammo sales and gun sales and talk about fascist dictators and taking over the country and rise up?
One of the things that happened was, he eventually kind of, with tongue in cheek, apologized. But one of the first things Michael Steele did when he became chairman of the Republican Party, you know, was to send a very clear signal about what he thought about the things that Rush Limbaugh says, for example. And he has talked a lot about how the Republican Party needs to change its message. And he's not the only one. I mean, you have to remember that during the last campaign, even though they were not liberals, there were people like Ken Duberstein, who was Ronald Reagan's chief of staff, Ken Edelman, who was Reagan's top arms control guy, mm-hmm. and you know, a lot of other conservatives who came out for Barack Obama. And they did it not because they endorsed everything that Obama wanted to do, but because, you know, they were rejecting what the Republican Party had become.
Mark Potok, our caller, Patrick, says, let's look at the substance here. Don't get so hung up on the rhetoric, and it's not just conservatives who get angry when things don't go their way. What about in these messages? I mean, are you really worried about these messages as literal threats, or do you see this as just addressing that a substantive critique is coming in?
No, I don't think it's a substantive critique. I mean, I think there is some substance, I guess, with some of these fellows when they say, you know, we have a fascist president, are trying to say is he's on the side of big government. But, you know, what I really wanted to respond to and what that caller said was the idea that these are simply things that are being, brought out factually and through different lens. And, you know, there that's simply not so. I mean, the bulk of the rhetoric that is coming from the far right right now is rhetoric about things like the North American Union, a conspiracy theory about the United States, Mexico, and Canada merging into one nation. It's things like Michelle Bachmann, the Republican congresswoman from Minnesota, saying Obama is planning to put our children into concentration camps. You know, it's the idea that there's a plot afoot to get rid of our currency, the dollar, and replace it with the Amero. You know, and it goes on and on and on.
There is a lot of big spending going on. Reasonable people are concerned about that. There's a drive to change the way our economy has worked. Some see that as a threat to capitalism.
That's not the way it's expressed. Mm-hmm. It's expressed as a conspiracy theory, very similar to the idea that there's a secret plan called the Plan Dotslan, under the terms of which Mexico is planning to reconquer the American Southwest. It's a complete and utter fantasy, similar to when Lou Dobbs gets on CNN and says that, 7,000 cases of leprosy were brought to this country by illegal immigrants. I mean, these are simply falsehoods. In some cases, they demonize large groups of people, like Latino immigrants or Latinos in general. In others, they demonize liberals. I mean, let's not forget, the man who shot up a church in Knoxville, Tennessee, last July, and told the police after he had murdered two people and tried to murder a whole lot more, what animated him entirely was hatred of liberals because they are a cancer and a pestilence. They are Marxists who are coming to take over this country.
You got to wonder where he gets that. Let's go to Beth in Schenectady, New York. Beth, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was going to say that the rhetoric came about, started to get strong about the same time that the eminent domain laws came in, and there was a huge boom in construction. And it falls along similar lines to pre-World War II Germany, and now that the economy is cooling off, and it's interesting the gentleman mentioned Latinos because they work largely in construction, and there's a lot of hatred in this country being whipped up through this rhetoric against, minorities. But it's very similar to pre-World War II, and, now there's all this construction rotting and people are out of work, but it's very similar.
Let us look at the economy part. Mickey Edwards, how about it? I mean, tough economic times, and these are no joke tough times where people are – who hadn't thought of losing jobs or losing jobs, that always stresses a culture. That always brings out anger and fear.
Yeah, well, it does do that. In fact, it's done that historically, and you can go back to the Know-Nothings in the 1800s. You can go back to, Father Coughlin. I mean, there have always been, during the hard times, in our Depression era, there was a lot of ferment from the left, the anarchists, American communists. I mean, they were very real, and it's not made up, and so one of the things that happens is that when you have really hard times and people are struggling, they start looking for scapegoats. Who caused this? What's the problem? Sometimes that leads in a very dangerous direction. But, I will say in response to the person who just not the caller, but I came in late, so I don't know mm-hmm. who else I'm here with. But it's a little bit like I did a book review of Tom Frank's new book, which was absurd because there is this thing of looking at a few very extreme cases, say a Michelle Bachmann or a Rush Limbaugh, and then attempting to paint that as a picture of conservatism.
I totally get your point. I want to look
silly.
Yeah, but on the other hand, Michelle Bachmann's in Congress, and Rush Limbaugh has, 20 million listeners? So it's not exactly fringe, but we'll look at it. Mickey Edwards, please stand by. Alan Lichtman in Washington. Mark Potok with the Southern Poverty Law Center in Montgomery, Alabama. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about hot airwaves, fear and anger in the age of Obama and economic bust. Mark Potok is with us. He's program director for the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project, tracks extremist and hate groups around the United States. Alan Lichtman is here, professor of history at American University, author of White Protestant Nation, and with us from Washington, and with us from Princeton, New Jersey, Mickey Edwards, former Republican congressman from Oklahoma, author of Reclaiming Conservatism. Let's listen to just a little bit here from, here's Glenn Beck again, on Fox now, a monologue last week, which he delivered while performing a kind of mock execution skit on a Fox staffer, implying that Obama was pouring gasoline on American citizens and lighting them on fire. Beck had this to say about Obama's pledge to get immigration reform on the agenda this year.
Obama wants to legalize the illegal aliens, you know, when unemployment is 8.5% and underemployment rate is 15.6%. You know, you're having a hard time finding a job, you know, without having to be forced. Do you have any matches? Forced to compete with a whole new crop of workers. So what does Obama do? He says, boy, I'm just out of stuff to do. What else could I possibly do to the American people? President Obama, why don't you just set us on fire? For the love of Pete, what are you doing? Do you not hear? Do you not hear the cries of people who are saying, stop! We would like some sanity in our country for a second. We didn't vote to lose the republic.
Okay, Glenn Beck there on Fox News pretending to pour gasoline on a staffer as he gives his monologue. Bebby in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. You're on the air, Bebby.
How are you?
Pretty good. What do you think? What do you see?
I'm an Alabama native. I've lived in the South all of my life. I'm 60 years old, so went through the 60s with all of the demonstrations and the Klan. And I feel very strongly that if we don't all love this country enough to be behind our president, we're in deep trouble. I was definitely opposed to George Bush, but I lived through 8 years of his decisions and things that I perceived to be missteps, but I love my country enough to pray that he succeeded. And I just think that we all need to express our dissent in a positive way. I think it's the highest form of patriotism. But we have a man who clearly loves this country and who wants what's best for it and admitted he'll make mistakes. But let's pray for him. Let's work together and make America what America can be.
Bebby, I appreciate the sentiment. Thank you for your call. Clearly, though, not everybody sees it just that way. Let's get Jason in New Britain, Connecticut. Jason, you're on the air.
Thanks for having me on the air. I just caught you. I was catching your radio station on the way to work.
Yeah.
And I'm a little concerned because I don't feel like you have very good balance on your program, and I think you're kind of letting a lot of certain misrepresentations being said.
Well, I mean, we're playing a whole lot of tape right from the mouths of those who are delivering it. So, what do you mean exactly, Jason?
Exactly, but then you'll put on some expert that's from Princeton or some that's the head of some foundation.
Former Republican congressman from Oklahoma. Okay.
Congressman who doesn't seem to espouse any Republican views whatsoever. But,
can I get in there 1 second?
And, yeah, maybe.
You know, I just have to, I don't know the caller, but, you know, I was national chairman.
I did call in. Can I make my point?
Okay, let's hear it, Jason. Let's hear it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so my point being, you have a guest on there that will follow up after these clips that really aren't that outrageous. They're just, some of them are a little more entertaining than others, but they're making certain real points about concerns about this administration and what they're doing to our economy and what they're doing to our society in general, what makes us American, et cetera.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You get a guy that'll in the next breath, will say, yeah, this is the same in the 30s when we were burning people at the stake for the color of their skin and there was all this anti-Semitism and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, to me, both you're making a huge stretch, and it's pretty disconcerting when you say somebody goes out and shoots, kills another human being because they listen to Glenn Beck, when in reality, we don't know the mental status of that person. They may be crazy for all we know.
Clearly not a good mental status.
It's a little bit disingenuous to get up there and say that, you know, when George W. Bush was president, you heard this kind of rhetoric not from just the average citizen or entertainers on TV or political pundits. You heard it from people in Congress. You heard Reid go in front of a bunch of kids and state that our president was a liar, and you didn't hold a show on it.
Just
the inherent bias of this whole premise that all of a sudden the rhetoric is out of control.
Jason, we've got your view. I have to say we do shows on the substance day in and day out. Today we're trying to laser in on this particular angle, but we take your point. I mean, there is inside these views substantive political perspective at the same time, and as you say, showbiz. Mickey Edwards, what do you say to Jason?
Well, first of all, I think that Jason misses the point here. I was going to just point out to him, because he didn't, I was national chairman of the American Conservative Union and the founder of the Heritage Foundation. I mean, this is not liberal. If you look at the a lot of the people who actually ended up out of despair supporting Obama because of their concern for what was happening with the Constitution, there were a lot of very prominent conservatives. The chairman of the American Conservative Union has been very outspoken about where some of the conservatives have been coming from. So it's not a bias, but I do want to emphasize one point that the mm-hmm. caller just made, and that is it's real easy to forget how much of this was coming from the left. During the Bush presidency, it's coming from both sides, and it's been coming from both sides for a very long time, and that's a concern to me. I do think that it's over the top. I disagree with a lot of Obama's policies. I don't think he's out to destroy America. I don't think he's out to coddle enemies. I mean, we have to get our rhetoric back to some normalcy. And people like Glenn Beck, I can't imagine what kind of people listen to a program like that.
Mark Potok, what about it? Everybody does it. Mickey Edwards says.
Well, I mean, I do want to respond to that, and something you said as well, the idea that there was an equivalent, boiling rage on the left during the Bush years.
Well, there was certainly boiling rage.
There was certainly boiling rage, but I think it was entirely different in the sense that, what you have now is you have people with slots on cable television news channels who have shows typically an hour apiece 5 days a week. They are given positions of great, or they have positions of great power, and that is the pulpit from which these things are said.
But you've got left-leaning talk show hosts as well.
In San Francisco, saying that Bush is a war criminal. That is really different, I think, than Glenn Beck saying on the air to hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people repeatedly, that we've got a Nazi for a president or that whatever it may be.
We didn't vote to lose the Republic. But you've got left-wing voices
now. There was no Rachel Maddow. There was no Keith Olbermann. Right. There was no Radio America.
But I mean, they've been around for a while, and they're on right now. Hey, let's go to Mark in Hartford, Connecticut. Mark, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have to respectfully disagree with the gentleman from Oklahoma about the rhetoric coming from both sides. Now, I do have all too vivid memories of the last 8 years and the rhetoric coming from both sides, the eliminationist rhetoric coming from the right. When a left-wing advocate gets exasperated with the conservatives, the reaction is typically, you're wrong, sit down, shut up, and let me get to work. When a right-winger gets exasperated with the liberals, the reaction is all too commonly threats to beat people up, shoot them, and burn down their house. And you just don't hear this eliminationist language coming from the left, and you hear it all too often on the right.
Mark, let us pick up that characterization. Alan Lichtman, you're our historian here. You hear how Mark frames it. What do you say to that?
I think there's certainly some truth to what Mark has to say in terms of the rhetoric might be hot on both sides, but it does tend to be a bit more personalized on the right and a bit more inflammatory on the right. But that said, I agree with what Jason said. I think it's very, very difficult to attribute the act of a single psychopathic killer to talk radio or anything else. Those kinds of linkages are very, very tricky. I do think, this is a perverse influence on our politics, but I don't think you can trace it to any one act. In addition, I think it's false to say that this kind of heated rhetoric is particularly associated with economic hard times. We saw in the relatively prosperous 1920s, that was the heyday of the Ku Klux Klan. The relatively prosperous 1950s was the heyday of McCarthyism. Hmm. The relatively prosperous 1960s was the heyday of the Black Panthers, the Weathermen, and other groups on the left that mirrored all of this. Finally, the final point I want to make is to put this in a little bit of perspective. The reason we don't hear as much from thoughtful voices of conservatives like Mickey Edwards, I think, is because the conservative movement itself is going through a major transition and right now is dealing with some real contradictions internally. The contradictions between the social conservatives and the business conservatives, which has torn the Republican Party right down the middle, for example, on the issue of immigration. Libertarian conservatives like Ron Paul versus the big government conservatives we saw in power during the Bush administration. Mm. So I think that's why a lot of these more strident voices have been taking over, that the thoughtful conservatives are kind of rethinking and reformulating their positions, and they don't have a national spokesperson.
Well, there's a lot of people thinking, you know, out loud, right out in public. There's also ratings here. Mark Potok, here's a comment from a Mark at our website, onpointradio.org, saying this is like fishermen throwing chum in the water to foment a feeding frenzy among sharks. The greater the anger, the greater their ratings. It's all about ratings. Do you see it that way, Mark? And what about Alan says it's too much to trace this kind of rhetoric to any particular act of violence?
Well, first of all, let me say that I certainly agree with Alan about that. And I don't mean to suggest that, you know, we can go to that Jim Atkinson shooter in Knoxville and say, you know, it's Bill O'Reilly's fault. But I think there, what I am trying to argue, though, is that the airwaves, the sort of public square is filled with this kind of rhetoric. It's been so for a good many years now. You know, the anti-immigration rhetoric that we have heard over the last 7 or 8 years, certainly from our analysis, has been behind the really quite rapid growth of hate groups in this country. So I think these things do ultimately have consequences. I agree that it's not possible to say, you know, because someone read a certain book by Ann Coulter, you know, they went out and murdered people.
Though, I mean, the Knoxville shooter did have Michael Savage's, you know, liberalism is a mental disorder.
We know where his, you know, some of his ideological interests were, and he spoke about it specifically. And, you know, that's not the only case. There are a good many of these cases. There's a fellow named Keith Luke, who stormed out of his house, allegedly, last January 23rd, the day after Obama was inaugurated, and started murdering black people in Brockton, Massachusetts. He was caught after killing two and nearly killing a third. You know, he'd intended to go to an Orthodox synagogue that evening and kill as many Jews as he was able. His reason, he told the police, was that he had been reading for 6 months white supremacist websites which portrayed the white race as the victim of a genocide, that whites were being wiped out in this country. Obama's election was a reflection of that and so on. So, you know, what I'm arguing is that rhetoric does have some kind of consequences. I'm not trying to paint a straight line in that way, but I think it's just undeniable that the rhetoric out there really does matter. You know, as to the question of whether these people mean it, the Glenn Becks, is he a rodeo clown, as he says?
Calls himself, Dennis Miller calls him a pretty shaky cat. I mean, he's a laughingstock in some ways, but...
But I mean, to me, it's irrelevant. Whether Michael Savage says the things he does, whether Hannity says the things he does in order to get ratings, whether that's why Lou Dobbs says what he says about immigrants, I think is quite irrelevant. The point is they are pumping this kind of poison into the atmosphere. And in the case of immigration, where we've seen a long, sustained attack on immigrants, I think clearly the result was the destruction of comprehensive immigration reform at the time, you know, and a sort of poisoning of the national discourse. So we're not talking about what level, we weren't talking about what level is immigration, of level of immigration is good for this country. We were talking about, you know, why are those people with brown skin coming up here to reconquer our country, to rape our daughters, to destroy our culture? And that, I think, is poisonous and anti-democratic.
Mickey Edwards, what's the answer here? Just to sort of ride through it, keep talking the issues, keep the national conversation going? We've been through rhetoric times before. We'll just sort of hunker down and keep going?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's the case. I agree with the point that's being made that it is bad. It has consequences. It certainly does. The only place where I'm disagreeing is that those people who say it's only coming from the right or it's of a different nature don't remember what it was like when Barry Goldwater was running or when Ronald Reagan was running. I mean, yeah, both sides. Both sides have their zealots who go over the top. And no, I don't think we can just ride it out. I think what has to happen is the people like the others who are on your show here, yourself, others have to start speaking out very, very forcefully. But we don't have any credibility unless
who's we? What do you mean?
Well, those, any of us, I'll include you in this. I'll include me in it. Those who are willing to say this has got to stop. We have got to get back to a more rational kind of political discourse. That's not going to fly unless we're willing to apply the same standards to right and left and say we're talking about principle. We're not talking about, you know, but the problem is whether you're on the right or left, the tendency is to think the people on the other side are stating an argument and you're stating fact. And we have to be even-handed and say we've got to stop this nonsense that's coming from both sides. After I wrote a column in the LA Times strongly criticizing Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh, I was invited on a radio show, a conservative radio show, and in the conversation, and to be berated, which I was, and in the course of the conversation, Laura Ingraham said to me, well, you know, it's entertainment. You do this for ratings, and I agree with what was just said. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it was for entertainment or not. There are a lot of people out there listening who don't know that, and they take it seriously, and it's really poisoning our political process.
Well, we will keep on keeping on trying to keep the conversation open and civil as we can, but the passions are very real here, and you can hear it just about any place on the dial. Mickey Edwards, it's always good to have you. Thank you very much for being
with us
today.
Thank you.
Alan Lichtman, same with you. Very great, good to have you today, and thank you very much for joining us, Alan.
Thanks, Tom.
And Mark Potok at the Southern Poverty Law Center, thank you very much for joining us, Mark.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thank you.